1 week after AEW announced a Anarchy in the Arena match for the third year in a row, Double or Nothing, we already have a change in the lineup due to injury. Eddie Kingston, Bryan Danielson, FTR against the Elite. That was the lineup that was announced last week. This past weekend, Eddie Kingston defended his New Japan Strong Openweight title against Gabe Kidd at the New Japan Resurgence show. And on that show, he lost his championship, but also in the course of losing his title in that match, he suffered a leg injury. When he was suplexed outside the ring, his leg smacked the guardrail hard. And it was pretty apparent that he was not in a good way. It just so happened, though, that the Elite showed up after the match. The Young Bucks, first appearance at a New Japan show in 5 years, they attacked Eddie Kingston. So it all kind of fits because Eddie Kingston is out, unfortunately, from the Double or Nothing match. In fact, he just posted a photo, I believe, on his Instagram showing himself in a wheelchair with his entire leg in a brace. And the word on the street is that he may be gone for several months. So best wishes to Eddie Kingston. Hopefully he'll get back soon enough. But he is out. And so the question now is, what happens to his spot at Double or Nothing? And we didn't have to wait very long to find out. They teased it early in the show. Oh, it's going to be 4-on-3. Maybe Team AEW would have to forfeit. Dax Harwood said, you know what? I think we have a fourth guy in mind. And they didn't tell us until the very end of the show when they revealed Darby Allin is already back. Darby Allin is all Elite on Team AEW in Las Vegas at Double or Nothing. He will be teaming up with Bryan Danielson and FTR. Yes, the same Darby Allin who 2 months ago broke his foot. And also in the last couple of months, not only did he break his foot, he got hit by a bus and got his nose broken. And that wasn't 2 months ago. What was that? A few weeks ago. Yes, that Darby Allin, not only is he back, his first match back of all things is an Anarchy in the Arena match. And I'll tell you something, it's still a safer place for him to be than on that mountain. So I don't care what kind of match it is, what kind of stipulation you want to throw in there. It's still safer for him to be in Vegas in that match than it would be for him to be on Mount Everest. But it also fits. You know, I was on TNT last night with JD on his channel. We were talking about this, and I brought up the fact that it was looking very likely that Eddie Kingston was not going to be able to be in the match at Double or Nothing. And we were talking about, you know, who could replace him, and I made the comment just last night, 24 hours ago. I said, ideally, if you had your choice of who could replace Eddie Kingston in that match, it would be MJF or it would be Darby Allin. It should be an AEW original. It should be somebody who would just make more sense to be on a Team AEW against the Elite. But unfortunately, they're hurt, and so they're not available. Or so I thought. As it turned out, Darby Allin was available, and he is on the team, and it fits. It actually makes a lot of sense, I think, for him to be on Team AEW. You know, it's kind of weird because, in a way, him being on this him being in this match makes no sense at all, and yet it makes all the sense in the world. That's kind of the best way, I think, to sum up Darby Allin and his involvement here in this show. So that was a genuine surprise, seeing him come out there. And, of course, they were in Washington. He's from that state, and so he got a great reaction. People were genuinely surprised. I was too, just to see him out there in his furry pink jacket that looked like a bathrobe. But there he was. In terms of building interest in their next 3-hour block of programming, very interesting how we have had quite a few 3-hour blocks from AEW in the last few months. Talked about that last night as well when we were talking about these TNT story, the NBA, and the, you know, potential rights renewal that AEW was looking for from Warner Brothers Discovery. It's very interesting how, with all of the sports preemptions, Warner Brothers Discovery has taken Collision and they've paired it up with Rampage, or they've taken Dynamite on some weeks and they've tacked on Rampage at the end of Dynamite. And they've had quite a few 3-hour blocks. It almost feels to me like they're experimenting. They're trying something to see how it goes. in terms of building their next 3-hour block, which is coming up this Saturday, I thought tonight was a fail. I thought they did a poor job of that. But what they did a good job of, at least for me, was hyping up their key matches for Double or Nothing. That I think they succeeded in. I thought they did a good job of that tonight. That includes the world title match with Swerve and Christian. That includes the Anarchy in the Arena match with the big reveal at the end of the show. And that includes the TBS Championship match with Willow Nightingale defending against Mercedes Moné. Because we got a contract signing with those two women on the show tonight. And we have not had a lot of quality Mercedes segments since her debut in Boston. She has not worked the match. She's not really taken any bumps. She hasn't done much of anything. And the segments they have had her in, the promos, the sit-down interviews, I don't think they've been very good at all. Tonight, though, was the first quality segment involving these two women. They got them in the ring for a contract signing. Willow is just a fantastic babyface. Mercedes is a very good heel. But it didn't look like they were having her play the role of heel, or they weren't going to have her play the role of heel. And I thought that was a mistake because I think she's a better fit in that role. Tonight, it became very clear whether they pivoted or whether this was the plan all along. She didn't look the least bit flustered out there when people started booing her. It's like she expected it because of the way she carries herself, even in this segment. Totally full of herself. Just completely and utterly full of herself. She is a heel through and through, and now that they've embraced it, and clearly they have set her up as the heel going into this match at Double or Nothing, who could boo Willow? I mean, who watching this show week to week could boo Willow Nightingale? Now the roles have been clearly defined, and I think it's the right way to go, and we got to see her take her first big bump, because she took a powerbomb through the table, everybody popped huge, so even the TBS title match, I thought the first real quality segment as far as building up that match at the pay-per-view next weekend. And we got two excellent matches as well tonight. We got an eliminator match between Swerve Strickland and Brian Cage. That was excellent. And the main event, Kazuchika Okada defending the international, or not the international, but the continental title. So many fucking titles in this company. I got them mixed up. Defending the continental title against Dax Harwood, chief Twitter blocker. Dax Harwood in the main event. Another excellent match. And so I thought it was a strong episode of Dynamite tonight. They did what they had to do. We got some quality wrestling. We got some outside-the-ring segments that were quality, including others that I'll talk about. This was a strong effort tonight on the part of AEW heading into Double or Nothing. And this, hopefully, will be a quality effort because this is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, May 15th, 2024. I am the Solemn Monster. Can you believe we are already midway through the month? It is already the 15th of May. Soon it will be June. And the forbidden door will be upon us. They've said nothing about that. That'll be the next big event coming up. Dynamite opened with the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion Jon Moxley coming through the crowd for the opening contest, which was Jon Moxley and Bryan Danielson taking on... This, by the way, was Danielson's first match since Dynasty. Taking on Kyle Fletcher and Jeff Cobb. This was Jeff Cobb's first AEW appearance since last year's Forbidden Door. Just like, boom, there he was. There he was on Dynamite. Haven't seen him in forever, but he just kind of popped up. Not much fanfare. Cobb and Fletcher, they were already in the ring. So when Moxley hit ringside, they immediately attacked him. Danielson had not even made his entrance yet. He did, though. He came out to make the save. And we got a giant brawl around ringside with the Blackpool Combat Club kicking their asses. Danielson's music kept playing through most of this. So I think this was giving you a taste of Anarchy in the Arena. That's happened before with those matches. They'll play the music for 5 minutes straight. It's just mass chaos. So I think they were giving you a little preview of what's to come. Paul Turner called for the bell to start the match once Danielson and Cobb made their way inside. They put a countdown clock. This was not the first time they've done this in the last couple of weeks. Countdown clock for Swerve, the world champion, in the corner of the screen to count down the minutes until his match with Brian Cage later in the show. Danielson and Moxley, they took turns lighting up Cobb in the corner, and Cobb was able to back Moxley into the heel corner where Fletcher made the tag and took over. Moxley just no-sold his strikes. Eventually, Fletcher backdropped Moxley to the floor, and it was John Moxley who was isolated. Danielson got a hot tag after a break. Quick sequence between Cobb and Danielson that led to yes kicks from Danielson. He ended up wiping out Fletcher with a dive. Rolled back inside right into a move, a slam here by Jeff Cobb. Cobb missed the standing moonsault, but he dodged the running knee strike into a spinning back suplex. Moxley and Fletcher, they tagged in. Fletcher got turned inside out with a King Kong Lariat. Cobb got caught with a cutter, but it was enough for Fletcher to hit a Michinoku driver for two. We got the locomotion corner strikes from Cobb and Fletcher, who hit a spinning tombstone on John Moxley for a near fall. Doomsday device attempt got cut off by Brian Danielson, who hit a Busaiku knee to Jeff Cobb. I like saying that word, Busaiku. It sounds a lot like our boy Abu Sika with his Bukkake Ghost super chat. Shout out to Abu Sika, wherever he may be. So he hit the Bukkake knee, and then after that, it was Fletcher who got planted by Moxley with a Death Rider. He dropped this guy right on top of the crown of his head. And thankfully, Fletcher did not kick out. I remember all those kickouts in the match with Ospreay a few weeks ago, but one Death Rider is all it took from the IWGP champion, and that put away Kyle Fletcher. Konosuke Takeshita appeared out of nowhere after the match. He hit a German suplex out of the corner on Moxley, who did not see him coming. Moxley and Danielson, they got beat down by the Callis family until Claudio Castagnoli ran out to make the save. He had some kind of a weapon in his hand, some kind of giant, I don't know what it was. They said it was like a crowbar. Biggest fucking crowbar I've ever seen. Even Taz couldn't come up with the word for whatever this thing was. But he ran off the heels. This felt to me like maybe they're setting up a trios match for TV next week, where we get Brian Danielson, Claudio, and Moxley against Takeshita and Fletcher and Cobb. So we'll see. That'll be the go-home dynamite to Double or Nothing next week. And at Double or Nothing, the question now is, do they do the IWGP title match there between Moxley and Takeshita? This is not the first time they've teased an IWGP match here. This is the second time, I believe, that we have seen Takeshita come out and go after Moxley and motion for the title. So they're doing the match, obviously. It's just a matter of where. Double or Nothing would seem to make sense because that's the next pay-per-view. And I just can't imagine them leaving John Moxley off of Double or Nothing. You know, he's one of their biggest names. He debuted at the show 5 years ago. That's where he made his debut, was Double or Nothing. They could, though, save this match for Forbidden Door. And it would make sense if they wanted to do the match there. So I don't know which one they're gonna go with. My guess would be that it will end up being Double or Nothing. I am looking forward to that match, though. I'll tell you what, though, Moxley, I gotta say, Moxley, it was noticeable tonight seeing him out there. He's in the best shape that I've seen him in a long time. You know, he's not like super jacked, but he kind of leaned out. He's actually got abs. So it was noticeable looking at him out there that he's in the best ring shape that I've seen him in quite some time. That's what happens, man, when you win that IWGP title, man. You got to get in tip-top shape. They aired a video package for the champion, Swerve Strickland, and they were showing him making the media rounds ever since becoming the AEW champion. I like that. Makes him feel big time. You show him. He's thrown out the first pitch, he's made radio appearances, he's doing all kinds of stuff. And, you know, WWE does a very good job of that. They'll give you this 3-minute video package showing their talent, doing all kinds of events and stuff like that. This is your world champion, so you should show stuff like this. So I like that. We got highlights then from last week of the Embassy turning on him, with Strickland then gaining a measure of revenge on them on Collision this past Saturday. The TNT champion, Adam Copeland, was out next to call out Malakai Black for a match at Double or Nothing. He issued the challenge on Collision this past weekend. Or maybe it was Rampage. It might have been another one of those three-hour blocks. But he threw out the challenge to a steel cage barbed wire match for Double or Nothing. So tonight, he was calling out Malakai Black to see if he accepts his challenge. He comes out. And he doesn't have much time to do anything because while he is on stage, he is ambushed by Buddy Matthews and Brody King. And they kicked his ass all the way down the ramp to the ring. Malakai Black then strolls out. He's got the TNT title that Copeland dropped. Brody King puts Copeland in the ring. He tosses a bunch of steel chairs into the ring with him. Black grabs a microphone as Brody and Buddy, they grab Adam from behind. And Black says that, Adam, you know, you continue with this facade. And I just don't understand. And as Malakai was talking, the crowd was showering him. They were serenading him in chants of, very classy chants here in Everett, Washington, of shut the fuck up, is what they were telling Malakai Black. And Malakai said, oh, then you're going to love this. And he commands Buddy to take Copeland's wedding ring off of his finger, which he does, and he hands it to Malakai. Malakai, he admires it, and then he takes it, and he puts it in his pocket. So Buddy drags Adam to the corner. Now, he's knocked out. He just looks completely out of it. Black and Buddy, they take chairs. They put chairs on either side of Copeland's head. And they're looking to attack. Here comes Kyle O'Reilly to make the save. And he rushes the ring. Brody is there, drops him with a huge lariat. Just wipes him out. He tosses Kyle back outside. Black hits him with the end. Copeland is still out. He's still seated in the corner. And the chairs are still in position. And Black and Matthews, they rush either end of the apron. They come in at the same time. And they hit drop kicks to the chairs as Brody hits a cannonball in the corner. So Copeland got it from all ends here. So they beat the crap out of him. And they stole the man's wedding ring. That's one way to put more heat on this match going into the pay-per-view, even though we got no official acceptance here in this segment, no confirmation of this match being official. That would come later in the show, but we never did get our answer here from Malakai. But again, you know, this it fits the story because he has been trying to pull out of Adam Copeland a side of him that he knows is still buried in there, but we have not seen, which is the sadistic, hardcore side of Copeland. And he's been trying to get him to come over to the dark side. He's been trying to pull it out of him, and so he feels like he has succeeded here because it was Copeland who issued the challenge to a barbed wire cage match. So he gave Malakai exactly what he wants, but we would hear from him a little bit later on in the show. The question is, do they belt Malakai Black? I'm just happy the guy is actually in a feature singles match on a pay-per-view. I can't remember the last time we had that. It doesn't even matter to me whether he wins or not. I'd like to see him win. I would like to see him win the TNT title. I don't get the feeling that that's going to be the outcome, though. So do I belt him? Yes. If it's me, I would belt him. But honestly, I look at the Elite story, and I just can't shake the feeling that Jack Perry is going to end up with that TNT title. And honestly, if they want to put more heat on the Elite and they want to give Jack Perry something to do other than just show up every week and shit talk people, I certainly can do without him challenging for the world title. I could see him going after Swerve. I could see that being a match in the next couple of months. But what would make sense to me is having him be the one to beat Adam Copeland, bring the TNT title into the Elite. Now they have the TNT title, they have the tag team titles, and they have the Continental title, which you know Okada is going to hold onto and keep warm until Kenny Omega is ready to come back. Right now, Jack Perry is the only one that has no gold. If you're going to put gold on him, the International title is otherwise occupied. The FTW title don't mean shit. You've got the Continental title is already in the fold, and I do not want to see Jack Perry as the world champion. What does that leave? TNT title. That might be the better play. That might actually make more sense. So the announcers recap Eddie Kingston's injury from this past weekend at the New Japan show. And they showed footage of what happened in the attack by the Bucks and the Elite after the match. So then we go backstage live. And we are with the Elite, who say Kingston must have been bit by the injury bug. Jack Perry said it might be 4-on-3 now at Anarchy in the Arena, or maybe they want to forfeit. Okada blew a kiss to Dax Harwood ahead of their match tonight and called him a bitch. When you call somebody a bitch, I mean, how many times do I have to say this? When you call somebody a bitch on a wrestling show, that's when shit gets real. when they bust out the B word, then you know they mean business. So anyway, I talked about this on TNT last night. Kingston was going to probably be pulled from the match. You could add him to the mile-long list of injuries. My God, if you look at this list of who's out, I guess we could scratch Darby off the list now. Darby was on that list. But if you look at the list, I mean, the list is long. You know, you've got MJF, you've got Adam Cole, you've got Miro is still out with a couple of different injuries. Powerhouse Hobbs just fucked up his, the patellar tendon. So he's on the mend from that. Julia Hart just had surgery. Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, so on and so forth. I don't even have all the names in front of me. You could put Eddie Kingston now on that list. It's crazy. You know, when the Bucks say, oh, he's been bit by the injury bug, this entire company has been bit by the injury bug. This bug has laid eggs. They've hatched. Everybody is being bit. So it's a tough time, but when you have a deep bench like they do, because they have so many people on that roster, they can absorb it. Because for every MJF that goes down, and Adam Cole, or Hobbs, or Miro, or Keith Lee, you know, you've still got Jay White. Jay White has no match announced right now for Double or Nothing. You know, I mean, are we going to get a Jay White match or not? Look at the rest of the roster. Malakai Black is actually getting a singles match, most likely, at Double or Nothing. You have other people. You have other reasonably big names on that roster that you can lean on. Evidently, Ricky Starks is not going to be one of those names. And even Ricky Starks is wondering why. But they have other people. Doesn't mean that Tony Khan didn't have long-term creative plans for some of these people that got all fucked up because of these injuries and forced him to have to just change whatever his plans were. When you have this many people hurt, it's going to screw with your plans no matter what. It's unavoidable. As far as who the fourth man would be, we would not have to wait very long to find out. In fact, Renee interviewed FTR in the back, and they acknowledged the fact that they think they found their fourth man. They also aired a commercial promoting a new Young Bucks sneaker that is coming out. It's a new Reebok pump because, of course, if you're going to come out with a new sneaker like that and you're going to promote a new product, it should be with a couple of your top heels in the company who people are supposed to hate. So, of course, it's their sneaker that's coming out. Speaking of the Bucks, we had the Young Bucks against Christopher Daniels and Matt Sydal in an eliminator match. Jack Perry sat in on commentary. Daniels had new music, which they said was performed by Frankie Kazarian's band. Excalibur pointed out the last time Daniels got in the ring with the Young Bucks was the match where SCU had to disband as a team when they lost, which they did. And now Kazarian is not even in the company anymore. So after a commercial break, Sydal, he leapt. He made a hot tag to Daniels. Death Valley Driver connects. The Bucks crashed into each other. That led to a DDT-STO combo. Daniels ultimately ate a super kick. Sydal got launched over the barricade by Matt Jackson. Daniels cut off Nick Jackson in the corner. He wanted a Hurricane Rana. Matthew, though, held on to his brother's leg, and so Daniels crashed and burned. And the Tony Khan driver followed, and the Bucks won the match. The big angle came when the match was over. So poor Christopher Daniels now. He has lost this match. And the Bucks, they walk up to the stage, and they turn around, and they have a microphone. And they talk about Daniels putting his hands on Matthew last week. And they say, you know, we're trying to rid the locker room of toxicity, and Daniels is trying to ruin all that. Tonight, they're the bearer of bad news. And that bad news is that the Young Bucks make the announcement that Christopher Daniels is fired from AEW. And they told him, don't worry, though. We're going to take care of your family, and we're going to pay you for the next 30 days. And they said they would even provide him with a security escort out of the building right away. And they thanked him for his 5 years of service to the company. Jack Perry is still on commentary. He raises what looked like a Woo energy drink into the air in salute to the Bucks. And then he poured it over Tony Schiavone's head. And Tony did not look amused. He got a good look in at the camera. Taz, you can hear him laughing on commentary. Excalibur didn't think it was very funny. This is an example of good heat for the Elite. It's a very simple angle here, but they are abusing their power. They are EVPs in the company, and they have the ability to fire people, hire people, make matches, do all of these things. In the absence of Tony Khan, even though Tony Khan is running the show from Jacksonville, is what we were told. It's not like he's laying in traction, unable to communicate. But they're using their power. And so what they're going to do is they're going to make themselves as annoying and as hated as they possibly can until one day, whether it's Anarchy in the Arena, or when Kenny Omega comes back, or MJF comes back, or whenever it may be, the day will come that these men will get their comeuppance. Today is not that day. It's still very early on in this angle. They're still trying to get as much heat on themselves as possible. Christopher Daniels is not somebody who we get to see on television very often. Okay, you could probably count on both hands the number of times we've seen Christopher Daniels on television in the last 6 months, 12 months, and still have fingers left over. But he has been there from day one, or practically day one, right? He's been there for about 5 years. He is a well-respected veteran. And so having him in a match on the show so he can get cheered by the crowd, having him fall short, and then embarrassing him in front of the world by firing him, and then having the gall to say, don't worry about it, we're going to take care of you and your family because we're going to make sure that you're paid for the next 30 days. It's just an easy way to get heat on the Bucks, and it worked here. You know, they got booed. Daniels is in the ring, and obviously he's very upset by this news. Jack Perry pouring the drink on top of Tony Schiavone's head, you know, like the little prick that he is. Again, easy heat, cheap heat, people like Tony Schiavone. Even when MJF that time on TV, I think he shoved Tony down, got a ton of heat just for putting his hands on Tony Schiavone. So these are the types of things that you do, you know, to get people to want to see you get your ass kicked. And hopefully, the hope should be that you can get people to want to pay money to come to the shows to see these guys get their ass kicked or pay for the pay-per-view. Right? They don't have a Peacock. They expect people to pay $50, unless you're using a VPN. But they expect people to pay $50 for these pay-per-views. Well, in due time, we'll find out if the angle is working. If the angle is working, then people will pay for the pay-per-view, and they'll buy tickets, and the ratings may start to go up, because this is their big angle. So far, it has not resulted in any noticeable uptick in business. But this is still the early stages of the angle. We're not seeing it yet, but that has to be the hope. If you're Tony Khan, this is your big angle. You want it to do big business. So far, it's not doing that. We shall see if that changes in time. But these are the sorts of things that you need to do to try to get heat on these guys. Renee was backstage with Timeless Toni Storm, Luther, and Mariah May. And Renee informed them that Luther, May, and Saraya would not be allowed at ringside tonight for Tony's match with Harley Cameron. Storm said that if they want to hurt Mariah May, they're going to have to answer to the bosom that she clings to. She said this as Mariah was literally clinging to this woman's bosom. Storm thanked Serena Deeb for knocking her out last week so she didn't have to listen to another second of her sob story. I thought that was a good line. She said after what Deeb did to her last week, she'll end up like everyone else in Las Vegas, flat on their back with an ass in their face, wondering how they ended up there. Hey, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. No judgment here. You know, Toni Storm, she's been doing this character now for many months. It's been a while. And she has mastered just every element of this character, from the just the way she speaks, the things that she says, the dated references, like at that scrum when she brought up Wendi Richter and she popped the entire room. Like, she has this character down to a science. And every now and then when I think to myself, has it run its course? You know, has this character run its course? Should she, you know, change back to the old Toni Storm or go in a different direction with this? We get a segment like this and it just reestablishes to me how entertaining it still is, which for me it is. Maybe to some people it's run its course, but I think it's great. And it's a character. Yeah, some people complain about the AEW product and they say, well, it's just a bunch of wrestlers having a bunch of matches, and they talk about story, but they also talk about character, right? And you want to have characters on the show that people can be entertained by, whether they're a heel or a babyface. Toni Storm is probably the greatest character in all of AEW. Every time we see her on TV, every time we have a promo segment like this, or she's on commentary, or they have one of her silent movies, she just knocks it out of the park. So her and Mariah May both, two of them together, are still, for me, one of the most entertaining parts of the show, even after all this time. Malakai Black was backstage. He was in a darkened room, and he was staring at Adam Copeland's wedding ring, saying that this was everything that has held Copeland back. Black said the challenge to a barbed wire cage match means that part of Copeland does still exist, just as he thought. He said, of course, he accepts. But he says when he wins, Copeland must bend a knee to the House of Black. So there it is. Challenge accepted. We are getting a barbed wire steel cage match. Double or nothing. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. I'm going to confess something to all of you right now. I have something I have been meaning to get off my chest, and I hate myself for even saying it, but I believe in Joe Hendry. I have not been able to get that damn song out of my head all week. But in all seriousness, we all carry around things that we want to get off our chest. All kinds of stressors, and keeping them bottled up, it's not healthy for you. It's not a good thing. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. I've gotten messages from listeners just like yourself that have heard me talk about BetterHelp and have taken advantage of the special offer I've been talking about. That was their foot in the door to try the service out. They've talked about how much it's helped them with whatever problem it is that they've been dealing with. And it doesn't matter how big or small it may be. You know, sometimes just having somebody to talk to can be super helpful and learning how to set boundaries. Maybe you don't have the confidence on your own or the knowledge even on how best to deal with whatever is stressing you out. It can be life changing to finally be able to do that. And it isn't just for people that have been through a trauma in their lives. Therapy is for everyone. And it can help teach you how to cope with whatever may be stressing you out. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's all online and flexible enough to fit into your schedule. To get started, just fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist, and even better, you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge if at any point you feel you need to do so. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. Hook was back for the first time since Dynasty, and he got hit in the face on that show with a baseball bat by Chris Jericho. He was back for a match here with Sebastian Wolfe. T-Bone Suplex sent Wolfe flying. Hook hit the crossface strikes. He sank in Red Rum. He got the quick win. It took all of 30 seconds, I think. Maybe a little less. So Hook takes the microphone from Justin Roberts, and he says he's here for the FTW Championship, and he calls out Chris Jericho, and out comes the Learning Tree with his big redwood, Big Bill. Jericho, he was waving. He was doing the finger guns to the crowd, completely delusional. Taz said this makes him want to vomit. Jericho said it's great to have Hook back. Hopefully, though, he learned a lesson after hitting himself in the face with a baseball bat. There are sometimes Chris Jericho segments on this show that have me wanting to hit myself in the face with a baseball bat. In fact, I have a barbed wire baseball bat sitting nearby, so there's still time. So he's happy to have Hook back. Hopefully, though, he's learned his lesson, and Jericho spoke about how happy he was to be called out, even if it meant sharing the spotlight with somebody. So Hook said the spotlight should be on Jericho because he wants the FTW title back, and he wants it tonight. So Jericho asked the crowd if they wanted to see that, and of course everyone cheered. And he said, I would too, but this isn't really a fighting moment. This is a teaching moment. Or as Andre Chase would say, this is a teachable moment. He said the world doesn't revolve around Hook, and he should think of others and be less selfish, like Jericho. The crowd chanted, "Please retire." And Jericho actually addressed it. And he said, "You know, if I do, I'm going to be inducted into every pro wrestling Hall of Fame that there is. And I'm not ready for that yet. I'm not ready for that yet." Yeah, well, there are people who are ready for that. But Jericho says he's not ready for it. He says, "When one loses a title, you must build your way back up." And he brings up a qualifier or a qualification match on Collision this weekend. Says maybe if Hook wins, he can get a shot at the title. And Jericho asked him if that sounds okay. Does that sound good? And Hook said, "Yeah, that sounds good. You know what else sounds good?" And he bonked Jericho in the head with the microphone and tackled him backwards into the corner. Big Bill attacked. The numbers were too much. Katsuyori Shibata hit the ring, and Bill and Jericho bailed. Jericho was shown bleeding from the... He kind of reached back and touched his head, and then he had blood on his hand. So I guess a hard way mic shot here. A stiff mic shot from Hook. But that was the segment. Delusional Jericho is going to be the best version of Jericho that they can do here right now. It really is the best option. There are times when he comes out here and he is hamming it up so much, and he has that big cheesy smile on his face, that it can be amusing. Do I want to see him on television every week? I don't. But if you're going to have him on TV doing a character, this is the character for him to play. He is completely self-absorbed. He is completely full of himself. He's just totally out to lunch. He's living in his own la-la land. And I especially got a kick out of the line about how you need to learn how to be less selfish, like me. So again, if he's going to play a character on TV, this fits him to a T. We had the AEW World Champion Swerve Strickland in the back. He congratulated the state of Washington because he brought the title home. This, of course, is his home. He also said he would put Christian Cage in the grave at Double or Nothing. Didn't we already see that? Didn't Jack Perry put Christian Cage? Oh, he put him in a... they did put him in the grave, though, right? He put him in the casket, and then they lowered the casket into the grave. So Jack Perry has already literally done what Swerve Strickland said he was going to do. So he started to make his way towards the ring. They followed him part of the way as his music was already playing. Then eventually he made his way into the arena for his match, one-on-one, non-title. It was a AEW World Title Eliminator match against his former stablemate from the Mogul Embassy, who turned his back on him last week, Brian Cage. And Strickland wasted no time in attacking right at the bell. He low-bridged Cage out to the floor. Tried for a dive. Cage, though, caught him in a suplex position and held him there for a while. But then Swerve just was gently lowered, and he landed safely on the apron. Hit a pump kick before delivering a double stomp to the arm. Strickland tried wrapping Cage's arm around the post. Cage used his good arm, though, to post Swerve and gain control. Cage wanted his suplex from the apron into the ring. Swerve snapped the arm, though, hit a rolling flatliner for two. And then there was an interesting little part here, because Taz on commentary, he brought up the fact that Brian Cage is a former FTW champion, and then he listed out all the FTW, or some or all of the FTW champions, at least here in AEW. And he mentioned Brian Cage, and he mentioned Jack Perry, he mentioned Hook, he mentioned himself. No mention of Ricky Starks, which was very interesting. And it seems like right now, even in his own words, Ricky Starks is sort of, I don't know if he's on the shit list or he's just intentionally being left out. Now, of course, why would he be left out intentionally? He says, "I'm not hurt. I wasn't hurt. I have not been out with an injury. I'm fine." This is what he said in a podcast interview this week, because he probably gets it all the time on social media. Like, "Where are you? Are you okay? Are you medically cleared? Are you ready to come back?" And he's like, "Dude, I'm not hurt." He's like, "I was never hurt. I don't know why I'm not on television. Do I wish I was in Las Vegas on the Double or Nothing card? Absolutely." He was part of a team with Big Bill. Big Bill has moved on to Chris Jericho. Ricky Starks has nothing to do. Why? Well, there's only one logical explanation for why, because Tony Khan knows that Ricky Starks is as good as gone. As soon as his contract is up, Ricky Starks is out the door. The only thing we don't know is when his contract is up. Now, there's chatter that his contract may be up in June. Nobody knows. In that same interview, he was asked about his contract, and he was like, nah, I really don't want to talk about that. I think certain things should be kept private and personal. So he didn't address when his contract is up. It could be up in a month. It could be up next year. We don't know. I tend to believe that his contract is going to be up in the next few months. Because if he had 6 months left or 9 months or a year left on his deal, Tony Khan is not going to bench him and sit him at home for a year and pay him to sit at home and do nothing for a year. So that tells me his deal is up sooner than later. When that day comes, he's gone. He's gone. And he knows that. And so he doesn't want to have him on TV and build him up. Now, look, he could put him on TV and job him out too, right? There are some promoters who would do that. Put the guy on television, let him job out to everybody, embarrass him, make his stock go all the way down, and then you can go. Right now, he's not doing anything with Ricky. And I think if we don't see Ricky on television soon, to me, that's indicative that his contract is up soon. Probably very soon. And then he will go, and he will go to WWE. There's no doubt in my mind. He probably already knows he's got a spot in WWE. And by the way, that could be in NXT, not necessarily on the main roster. You know, we can get Trick and Rick fighting over the NXT championship. But either way, I, like probably everybody else, figures that he's on his way out. And that's likely the reason why you don't hear his name mentioned, and he has not been brought back to TV, even though he is, by his own admission, he's healthy. He's cleared. He could have been on TV tonight if they wanted him there. I think what really hurt Ricky Starks, I can't sit here and tell you that Tony Khan is the responsible, solely the responsible party Ricky Starks has been buried or no. Ricky Starks should be used more than he is, but Ricky Starks was also a victim of the Punk stuff going down when it did. It's a very good chance Ricky Starks would have ended up with that real world title that CM Punk was walking around with. You know, he's good, friends with Punk. He was working with Punk. Punk stuff went down. Punk left. I think that fucked things up. That didn't do him any favors. But it's just, I could think of other people, Wardlow being one of them, who Tony Khan has dropped the ball with even more than Ricky Starks. Tony Khan bears some of the responsibility here as well. But I think it's just a whole confluence of different circumstances that have worked against this guy. And he's going to be better off leaving and going somewhere else. Because it's pretty clear to me between that and the fact that they already are stockpiled with bigger names than Ricky Starks. When is he really going to have an opportunity to break through to that next level? Is he a world champion? I don't know. But surely he should be involved in some major program right now on the show, and they're doing nothing with him. So the best thing that could happen is for him to just count down the days and get out of there. And I'm sure he'll end up in WWE. Why wouldn't they take him? They'd be crazy. You don't think they couldn't use him? They don't need Ricky Starks, but you don't think the WWE couldn't use a guy like that with all of his charisma? Strickland dodged a powerbomb and sent Cage to the corner. Hit a haluva kick, basically, to the injured arm. Strickland connected on the uppercut to the back, coming off the middle rope, before catching an attempted Brian Cage leapfrog into a brainbuster for a near fall. Yeah, I mentioned Wardlow a moment ago. Wardlow posted a tweet. Somebody posted something saying, I miss this guy, and it had an old picture of Wardlow. You know it's old because he still had the ponytail. And Wardlow quote tweeted it and said, I miss that guy too. It's like AEW, you're either super happy. Like Adam Copeland shows up every week. He's got a big smile on his face. He gave that rah-rah speech last month. I'm so happy to be here. Wrestling is great. Wrestling is healthy. And then like there's this other half of AEW that just feels like it's like this den of unhappiness with people who are just stuck. And they're just depressed because they're not doing anything. And they would rather be anywhere but where they are. And I feel like Wardlow and Ricky Starks, they kind of both fall into that category. I feel like once his ponytail got cut off, that was it. That was like the end for Wardlow. Not that they were doing great things with him before that, but like once the ponytail got cut off, he just hasn't been the same. I think there was some kind of power that ponytail had, and now he doesn't have it anymore. He's another one who I would not at all be surprised if he was counting down the days. Strickland attempted a rolling flatliner for a second time. He ate a pumping knee strike. Cage wanted Weapon X. Strickland rolled through into a short arm scissors, only for Cage to power him up into a buckle bomb. Swerve avoided the drill claw, and Cage fell to the apron. He was hung up in the ropes, which allowed the champion to connect on a slingshot double stomp to the outside. Back inside, Strickland hit the 450 splash, but Cage kicked out. Cage hit a pop-up powerbomb for two of his own, and then Cage again wanted the drill claw. Strickland fought out of it, and Swerve fought back. He snapped the arm, he hit the house call kick, and he pinned him. Great match. Great win here for the champion. He looked great. The crowd was into it. You wanted to have Swerve in the ring tonight. He was in Washington. It's basically it's like his hometown. So he went out there in front of his hometown fans. He got a great response. He got a great win here. And Brian Cage was great too. The thing with Cage is he just loses far too often to really feel like a credible challenger. And this wasn't even a title match. But even just to win this match to eventually get a title match, it never at any point, from the moment they announced the match, felt like he had a shot in the world. Yeah, especially with Swerve going into a title match on the pay-per-view next weekend. So you kind of lose that dramatic aspect to it. But I thought he did a great job here as well. So kudos to both men. So after the match, Swerve put two chairs in the ring before Christian's music hit, and he walked out with Mother Wayne. Always good to see Mother Wayne here on this show. So Nick Wayne appeared to ruin it all. He appeared from behind Swerve, who didn't see him, and he delivered a low blow. Killswitch showed up. He dropped Swerve with a pump kick. And Nick then held up a family photo. I don't know if it was framed. It was in some kind of a glass frame. And he held up a family photo of Swerve with his daughter. And I presume his wife or girlfriend or whoever it may be. And then he broke the photo. He shattered it over Swerve's head. And he busted Swerve open on the side of his face enough that he was leaking blood. They showed him lying on the mat. And he was leaking blood right out of the wound. Hey, David, I'm glad David enjoyed it. Shout out to David. So Christian made his way to ringside. Now it's safe, of course. So Christian begins the slow walk down to the ring. He doesn't actually get in the ring, though. So they put Swerve. He's kind of hanging across the middle rope. And Christian's outside the ring just looking up at him. And Christian tells Strickland that you embarrassed my son last year by attacking him right down the road here in Everett, Washington. Cage said that he is forced now to embarrass Strickland, and he asked if his daughter is proud of her absentee father. Cage wiped Strickland's bloody face with the photo, so now the photo had blood all over it. He said, tonight, I took your blood. At Double or Nothing, I take your World Heavyweight Championship. So a year after Swerve left Nick Wayne laying in a pool of his own blood, Nick got his revenge, and he made Swerve bleed. See, there you go. That's some storytelling right there. There's some long-term storytelling. Whether Tony Khan actually intended for it or not, it is nonetheless long-term storytelling here. I like the callback. Christian, once again, this is like the third week in a row that he has left the champion laying on this show, and he has taken something from him. Right? He's taken his braid. He's taken, this week he took blood from him. We'll see what he takes from him next week. Last week, he took the Mogul Embassy away from him, right? His boys, they turned their backs on him. So they've got to put heat on Christian because Christian's not winning the title at Double or Nothing, right? You got to build him up in a credible way. Remember how Christian got this match in the first place. He was gifted a title opportunity by the Young Bucks because they are drunk with power. Not because he earned it, not because he's number one in the rankings, which I don't even think exist anymore. Right, he lost the TNT title and then showed up again weeks later, and now he's challenging for the world title because the Elite. That's why. So nobody, I think, really expects him to win the championship at Double or Nothing. So what they're doing is they're putting as much heat on him as they possibly can, and they're building more and more sympathy for the champion. and come Double or Nothing, he will get his revenge. So it's wrestling 101. Christian is great. Swerve is great. I thought this was an effective segment. Renee was backstage with Hook and Katsuyori Shibata, who came out earlier to make the save. Where is Prince Nana? Well, didn't Prince Nana get beaten up a few weeks ago? So Prince Nana must be selling his injuries, which is very unique for somebody in AEW, because very rarely does anybody sell anything. Don't get me started on that Orange Cassidy spot last week. So Prince Nana will be back. Maybe he'll be back at Double or Nothing. But Renee was in the back with Hook and Shibata, and she asked if the numbers game is becoming too much for Hook against Chris Jericho. The numbers game. Jericho has one person with him. Hook had one person with him here to come out and help make the save. What numbers game are we talking about here? Like, with the Elite, I understand it. It's a big faction. I understand it. Jericho has one guy who comes out with him. What is this numbers game? Hook said, look, the numbers game doesn't matter. He'll beat who he has to in order to get a shot at Jericho. So Shibata did the phone gimmick where he types into the translator. We hear a woman's voice ask if Hook really means that, even if it means going through him. And Hook said, if that's how it's got to be, so be it. Samoa Joe walks in. He is wearing a dress shirt. He's wearing a dress shirt that has flowers on it. He laughs, says that he thought Hook had promise, but Jericho has him looking like a fool. And Joe said he saw something in Hook. Maybe he was wrong. And he walked off. And as he walked off, Hook yelled in his direction and said, I'll fight you. He did fight him. He did. Didn't work out too well last time for Hook. See, we tried that already. Shibata held up his phone. And the woman's voice said that Joe is too large to be wearing a floral pattern, which got a pop from the fans in the arena. Are they teasing a trio? Because I think they're teasing a trio here of Samoa Joe, Hook, and Shibata. Because I wouldn't hate that. In fact, I would kind of like to see that. I think that could work. I would like to see that trio. I would like to see Joe and Hook and Shibata. I like the Shibata phone gimmick. I know some people may think it's goofy. Oh, Shibata should be a killer when he got... Yeah, please. Like I said, they need more characters on these shows. If they want to introduce a little bit of comedy into Shibata's act, that's fine. I don't see anything wrong with it. I think it's actually an effective way, frankly, for him to communicate in these backstage segments. So I get a kick out of it. And I don't hate the idea if that, and I don't know if that's the plan, but if it is, I don't hate the idea. We had Timeless Toni Storm, the AEW Women's World Champion, one-on-one with Harley Cameron, non-title match. Harley impressed me last week. She had that match with Mariah May. I don't think I had ever seen this woman wrestle before. I just thought that she was brought in. I didn't even know where she was from. I just thought she was brought in as a character on the show, a manager. She was the psycho girl there for a while. I didn't know that she underwent training and she actually had some wrestling experience. So seeing her in the ring last week with Mariah May opened my eyes like, oh, you know what? Not bad. She wasn't bad in that match. So I was curious if it was kind of a one-week thing or how she would look here against Toni Storm. And she looks solid again here this week. Serena Deeb walked out on stage early in the match. This distracted Toni Storm. The crowd was loudly behind Toni. She mounted a comeback with a backstabber and a fisherman suplex. Cameron battled back with Soul Food and a Shining Wizard for two. Cameron got ahead of steam, ran into a sit-out choke bomb. Both women traded near falls before Toni pump-faked the punch. Cameron ducked, and that's when Toni connected with Storm Zero for the win. So solid stuff here from these two women. The crowd noticeably behind Toni Storm. I'm not sure how anybody is going to be cheering for Serena Deeb at this pay-per-view, and I don't think that that's what they had in mind when this first started, because she was telling her story, as Toni Storm said earlier, her sob story, but she was telling her story last week about the seizures that she had, and she missed, you know, a year of her career and didn't know what was going to happen, if she would have a future in the ring. Total babyface story. People don't care. They love Toni Storm. She's going to get cheered more than Serena Deeb will at the pay-per-view. It's just the way it is. The people, it's very clear who the people want to cheer for. and it's not going to be Serena Deeb. Now, they had their new correspondent, our Kitty Aura. She was in the back with international champion Roderick Strong, who was flanked by the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions Matt Taven and Mike Bennett. And Will Ospreay was there. And she thanked both men for agreeing to no physicality here. Of course, they're going to be wrestling for the international title at Double or Nothing. Ospreay said he's got a sour taste in his mouth after what happened to him, courtesy of Shane Taylor. He's going to be wrestling Shane Taylor on Collision this Saturday. Ospreay said he's tired of how confident Strong is around him, only because he's surrounded by the Undisputed Kingdom. There was no Wardlow here, by the way. Unless I just missed him. He is kind of invisible on these shows these days. Ospreay said Roddy doesn't respect him no matter where they've competed around the world. PWG, Ring of Honor, doesn't matter where. He hasn't respected him. Strong says that that's the smartest thing that Will has ever said. Will is so talented in the ring, but he is dumb as dirt outside. Now that he has a child and a wife, he said that Ospreay is still a child. He doesn't deserve this title. Strong said he overcame something traumatic in his life, a devastating neck injury. But he doesn't quit. He doesn't care who we think Will is. He knows who Will is. He is a child. And Ospreay says that this will be sweet for him. He says Roddy is going to learn humility. He will take the one thing that makes Strong important. He is the best wrestler in the world, internationally known, and it's his time to show why he is on another level. Was Wardlow there? Have I completely blanked on Wardlow? Wardlow is literally invisible to me. Like, I did not even see him. I literally saw Matt Taven, and then I looked down and I continued to take my notes, and it never occurred to me that Wardlow was there. How sad is that? Sad for me, but sad for Wardlow as well. Literally background noise, and I don't even see him. This is what this man has been reduced to. Oh, man. Oh, boy. That's actually fucking hilarious. Wardlow was actually there. Wow. Okay. Not that it matters, but apparently he was there. I thought this was good stuff here from both these guys. Ospreay continues to be a strong promo, I think, in segments like this that they've done with him. He is challenging for a title at the pay-per-view. Even still, it feels like a big step back from what he was doing before. He was on television every week, and he was having these great matches. He had that great battle with Bryan Danielson, building up all this momentum. You know, just to send him in there at Double or Nothing to wrestle Roderick Strong. For a title that, like, I don't know, you know, who cares? But then again, you look, it's like, well, what would you have him doing, right? It's too early to have him wrestling for the world title. To put him in Anarchy in the Arena wouldn't even make any sense. He's not had any interaction at all with the Elite, and he's only been in AEW for a few months. So him being on Team AEW would feel a little hollow. So honestly, it probably is the best spot for him, you know, especially if he's going to win. He gets to walk around with a belt. But even still, it feels like he's taken a step back, a couple of steps back with this feud. Renee was in the ring to moderate a contract signing for the TBS Championship match at Double or Nothing with Willow Nightingale and Mercedes Moné. The Be the Booker goal for tonight is 400. I think we're closing in on 350. So again, hit that like button if you have not already done so, and we'll see if we can get that done. I can't get over the Wardlow thing, though. That is hilarious. I have to go back and watch this now. He was standing there the entire time. I literally saw right through this man. Like, he doesn't even exist to me anymore. That's how useless he is in this company now. And it's not his fault. But this is what they have done to Wardlow, where I don't even recognize him when he's standing right in front of me. He's like John Cena. I don't see him. This is Wardlow's new gimmick. All right, well, Mercedes was introduced first. She came down to the ring. Then Willow came out, and halfway down the ramp, she told Stokely Hathaway and Chris Statlander, I got this. So they didn't come down to the ring with her. They went to the back. He was in the back the entire time. Oh, man. So we got the two ladies in the ring sitting at the contract signing table. And Renee said, there's so much history between the two of you, but it's also the AEW debut for Mercedes at Double or Nothing. Willow said that she respects Mercedes, but does Mercedes respect the TBS title? The title celebrates professional wrestling on this channel and a legacy built of fighting and dedication, something that every woman who has held that title represents. Now she is the face of TBS, and throughout all the doom and gloom, her smile is her strength, and that's why this title means so much to her. Nightingale said that she's never going to allow Mercedes to take that away from her, and then she went and she signed the contract. Then it was Mercedes' turn, and she got a good amount of boos here from this crowd of Washington. She says, you know, the CEO is here, and everybody booed, because what the fuck does that even mean? She's the CEO. CEO of what? I don't know. She's the CEO, though. She laughed at Willow bringing up legacy, and she mentioned 2015 and alluding to her match in Brooklyn with Bayley at TakeOver, and said that while she was changing the game, Willow was still training. She talked about throwing out the first pitch and making red carpet appearances, and that's what a CEO does. She talked about breaking down doors and glass ceilings, as Willow wouldn't be here without her. She said she respects Willow as champion, but there's a difference between being great and being the greatest of all time. And her legacy is all about winning, and she signs the contract. So Willow then brings up the last time that they got in the ring together and wrestled. She walked away a champion, and Mercedes did not walk away at all. That got a nice reaction from the crowd. That got a rise out of the audience, and it got a rise out of Mercedes, too, because she slapped Willow, and then she took the TBS title. She went for a belt shot. Willow dodged it and then hit a doctor bomb through the table to leave Mercedes laying to close out the segment. The crowd erupted, by the way. When she put Mercedes through this table, big pop. And this was her first bump, or first big bump, since coming back from her injury. I have said before, this woman is a born heel. Mercedes, Sasha, whatever, you look back on her career, when she's a babyface, she's got a lot of fans, right? She's a good babyface when she wants to be. If she's in there with a great heel, she could be a good babyface, but she's a much better heel. She carries herself as a heel. She's smiling and smirking at people. I'm the best. I'm the CEO. You know, when you wouldn't be here without me. She's leaning into it now. Now, was that the plan from the get-go? When they get to her first match, she's going to be the heel going into it? Maybe. Maybe it was. I'm happy to see it because it's the right role for her to be in. Willow is just the quintessential babyface. This woman comes out, big smile on her face, her music. Everything about her is just happy and cheerful and poppy. You can't make her a heel in this feud. You put these two women in the ring together, there is one clearly defined babyface and one clearly defined heel. Now the roles have been firmly established, which I'm happy to see. And I'm happy to see she took a bump. So I thought, as the contract signing goes, this was great. As contract signings go, I thought this segment was great. And this is the way it needs to be, with Mercedes as the heel, completely full of herself. This is why I thought that they were going to put her in the Elite. There's still time, by the way. I thought they might put her in the Elite, make her the female, resident female member of the Elite, because it kind of went hand in hand with the big business theme. The CEO, the boss. If they wanted to add a female member to the Elite at some point, she's perfect. I mean, she's the one for the role. I don't know that they're going to do that. But I like this segment. I thought this was the best Mercedes segment since she debuted in the company, was this contract signing right here. And it got me interested now to see these two go at it and get that rematch finally at Double or Nothing. It's going to be a year since their last match. They were having a pretty damn good match before she got hurt, and they had a rush to the finish. I want to see what they can do with both women fully healthy in the ring on a big stage like Vegas, Double or Nothing, title on the line. I've been waiting for Mercedes to get back in the ring. I just want to see her wrestle. These promo segments have not been great. They've left a lot to be desired. And still, I've had some people argue with me. The people that have Mercedes as their avatar and stuff. And then you kind of like, all right, you back away because you just know what you're about to deal with here. And of course, the woman could do no wrong. I'm a huge fan of hers. I just don't think her work on the microphone has been all that great since she got into the company. But now, going forward here, heading into this match, I'm happy that we're finally getting her back in the ring. Because she is great. She is great in the ring, and I think that there are people who shit on her for a whole multitude of different reasons. They don't really give her enough credit for her actual in-ring work. Still, I think her and Willow are going to tear it up at the pay-per-view. The main event was for the Continental Championship. Okada defending against Dax Harwood with his deadly new finish, the Twitter block. He's perfected this move. JBL would be proud. So Harwood quickly looked for a sharpshooter in the early going. Okada scurried to the floor to regroup. Back inside, Okada gained control. Took too long, though, to follow up, and Harwood fired off some stiff chops. Okada put the brakes on to avoid a backdrop, and he posted Dax as they went to commercial. They came back from the commercial break. Harwood dodged a corner charge and connected on a spine buster. Harwood went to the corner. Okada, though, was there to meet him, and he drop-kicked Harwood to the outside. Okada delivered a running boot against the LED screen and followed that with a draping DDT off the barricade and spiked him on the floor. Okada wanted the count-out win. Harwood was able to break the count to 9. Okada wanted a rainmaker. Harwood, though, collapsed. He was still a little woozy from the DDT. Okada tried again. Harwood ducked, though, fired off some rolling German suplexes. Harwood again tried for the sharpshooter. Okada upkicked out of it, though. Harwood flew backwards into the corner. And Dax fought off a tombstone. He wanted a pile driver. Okada countered into an air raid crash for 2. Okada took too long to follow up with his top rope elbow. Harwood cut him off with a big superplex. And both men rolled to their knees. They started trading headbutts lightly, but they were still headbutting each other. Okada tried a discus lariat. Harwood beat him to the punch. Harwood countered a tombstone attempt into one of his own for a close 2 count. And Harwood went up top, missed the headbutt. Okada wanted a rainmaker. Harwood spun out, swept the legs, sank in a sharpshooter. Did not have it on for very long, though, because Okada was able to get the ropes. And then he went to the floor. He grabbed the Continental title. Harwood threw him back inside. As Bryce Remsburg took the title to go put it away, his attention was diverted. As Dax climbed back up on the apron to get back in the ring, Okada kicked the middle rope right up into his crotch. And so the low blow, referee did not see it. And then Okada delivered a rainmaker for the win to retain the title. Very good match here. As soon as the match was over, the Young Bucks hit the ring. Jack Perry comes out as well. They pounced on Harwood. Here comes Brian Danielson. Here comes Cash Wheeler for the save, only to get beaten down. So now the baby faces are outnumbered. What are the baby faces going to do? See, now this is the numbers game. I don't know what Renee was talking about with Hook with the numbers game. This is the numbers game here. Okay, they're outnumbered. They're outgunned. They're outmanned. Here comes the fourth man now for Double or Nothing. Here comes Darby Allin in his home state of Washington. Gets a huge reaction, I think, in large part because people were not expecting to see this fucker back so soon. Broken foot in April. And he had talked about, probably not going to be back until sometime in June. So broke his foot in April and then got hit by a bus here in New York and got his nose broken, and he's already back. And again, he had this furry pink jacket. He looked like he was wearing like a fucking bathrobe, but he comes out and he's got his skateboard and he smashes the Elite with it. They wasted no time in getting the graphic up on the screen right in the corner, and Darby was already added to the match. Like, they did not waste a second. Like, yep, it's official. Darby Allin is the fourth man. He'll be on Team AEW in Anarchy in the Arena at the pay-per-view. So I was very surprised. I was shocked. I was shocked to see him out there. But it makes sense. You want someone who really represents AEW in that spot on Team AEW. And I said it last night on TNT. I said, man, perfect world, it would be MJF or Darby, but they're hurt. Is Darby 100%? Probably not. Darby is never 100%. Darby will never be 100% until the day he dies, okay? All the shit that he puts himself through. But obviously, he must be medically cleared, and he is officially back. And he is a great replacement for Eddie Kingston. Is it a smart move to bring him back and put him right into a match like this where he's probably going to kill himself again? No, it's not. I mean, you saw what he did to himself in the Sting retirement match. You see what he does to himself every night he goes out to the ring. What do you think he's going to do in the Anarchy in the Arena match? I mean, this is right up his alley. But he is a very suitable replacement for Eddie Kingston, who, again, if you missed it, Eddie is out with a leg injury that he suffered at the New Japan show over the weekend. Posted an image of himself sitting in a wheelchair smoking a stogie on Instagram. His entire leg is in one giant brace. I don't know if he already had surgery, if he's going to have surgery, what the injury is, if he broke his leg. It's the kind of injury where I don't know that he would have torn something. I mean, his leg smacked the guardrail, so he may have broken his leg. You know, the word is that he's going to be out for many months. So here's to a speedy recovery for Eddie Kingston. But this is a match that it really is. It is tailor-made for Darby Allin. I'm just surprised this fucking guy's already back. But I thought this was a very strong show tonight. I did. I think that the key matches for Double or Nothing that they needed to hype up and get some heat on, they did. They did that with Copeland and Malakai, which is now official for the pay-per-view. They did it again with Swerve and Christian. They've been doing it now for a few weeks, trying to get as much heat on Christian as possible going into the title match. Here, the way that they reveal Darby, you know, they teased earlier in the show that, well, we might have found our fourth man. And they made you wait to find out who that person would be. Would we find out before the end of the show? And we did. So I thought that was smart on their part. So that was a fun way to end the show, but we had two really great matches on this show. You had Swerve and Brian Cage, who killed it. You had Dax and Okada, who had a very good match in the main event. The Tony Storm stuff I'm still enjoying. A lot more good than not on this show tonight, and a very effective contract signing segment. The best Mercedes segment that they have done with this woman since she debuted a couple of months ago. So on the whole, I actually thought this was a very strong episode of Dynamite going into Double or Nothing. And we have one more left, because the pay-per-view is not this weekend, it's next weekend. We got two pay-per-views. We got King and Queen of the Ring on the 25th, and then Double or Nothing on the 26th. So we have one more Dynamite, and we have two more collisions to go until we get to the pay-per-view. Here is the Twitter poll. What did you think of Dynamite for May 15th? Right around 49% thumbs up, 23.6% thumbs in the middle, and 27.6% thumbs down. So a lower score than I would give this show. I don't agree with that number. But you can certainly cast your vote at Solomonster on X and let me know what you thought of Dynamite tonight. I want to give a shout out here. Before we get into all your super chats and everything, I want to give a shout out to my boy Montesi. Go give him a listen. Give him a watch here on YouTube. Type in Montesi, Montesy, or Teasy's Table. He's got his YouTube channel. You can check out his music. He's got interviews. He's got special features like his Top 5 Tuesdays. He's a very talented guy. I've known him for a very long time. He's also Swerve's co-host on his Swerve City podcast. But check out Montesi on YouTube. And I also want to thank everybody who showed up last night, Tuesday Night Titans, our second episode together, myself and JD over on his channel. We talked about a lot of different things, including AEW and the whole TNT and TBS and NBA situation and what's going on there and the potential effect that it could have on AEW. But if you missed it, there it is. Look at these two guys. Rock on, my friends. Rock on. On Tuesday nights, my hair has never looked so good. I'm so jealous right now. Look at this. But thank you for the support. It's been 2 weeks so far. We've gotten a lot of good feedback. And go over and check out that show from last night if you missed it. This has become like my favorite photo. I gotta say, shout out to Lamont. All those guys, Lamont and Andy and everybody with these images and these memes. I don't know how you do it, but I'm loving it. I am loving it. All right, let's get to your super chats. Let's get to it. Want to hear from you guys. Let me bring up the early ones first, which are not listed here because, of course, why should they be? Let me just start out here. Give a shout out to Roscoe P. Coltrane. Congrats on reaching the 80K follower mark. A testament to the quality of your hard work and your excellent show. Hey, Roscoe, that's very kind of you, brother. Thank you very much. Roscoe P. Coltrane. Justin Hesse was the one who broke in the first flying cow, $28. Hey, Justin, thank you, man. The Juliet. Cena is hosting Shark Week. Can sharks see him? No, but they probably would have a better job of seeing him than Wardlow at this point. As the cow flies, the cow shits. That is true. Words to live by. Rojo Bear, Jungle Boy should not hold gold, period. Well, Jungle Boy already held gold. Jungle Boy has been a tag team champion. Jungle Boy has been an FTW champion. And I hate to burst your bubble, but Jungle Boy will hold gold again in the future, whether you like it or not, or whether I like it or not. I think he's going to get that TNT title. That's what I think. Joseph Stewart. Why did Sting join the NWO Wolfpack in the summer of 1998 in WCW? Because WCW, that's why. You're asking me to come up with a sensible explanation for why WCW would do the things they did? Sting should never have joined the NWO. I know people think, oh, it's cool, he was in the Wolfpack. All right, well, maybe it was cool, but Sting in the NWO, it's like sacrilege. You don't have Sting join the NWO. The antithesis of what the NWO is supposed to be. David Thering with the $28. Again, we read that one earlier. He wanted to see the flying cow. You got your flying cow. Hey, David, thank you, man. Barry MK, Tony is just way too good at her gimmick to be hated. Wow, the fans are cheering for him, man. How can you boo this woman? When you're that good at what you do, inevitably, what will happen is the fans are going to cheer for you, even if they're not supposed to. And that's what we're seeing right now with Toni Storm. Barry also says, I've been watching the 2005 WWE shows, and the feud with Eddie and Ray has been the best of that year. It also made Ray's WWE run. He did nothing but tag and cruiserweight stuff before this. Yeah, and I'm sure Eddie was more than happy to help get him over in any way that he could. It also gave us the custody of Dominic match, which Ray now says that had he known his son would turn out the way that he did, he would have just willingly surrendered custody to Eddie without having to do the ladder match. And Mr. O, Brother Solo, today is my birthday. Good episode of Dynamite tonight. Keep up the good work. P.S. What the fuck are you drinking? Nothing tonight, but Mr. O, I gotta wish you a very happy birthday. At least they gave you a good Dynamite. Hopefully I'm giving you a good streak. Happy birthday, brother. I hope it's a good one. And that's it. That's it. It's a quiet night, I guess, as some of these AEW streams tend to be these days. We are at 399 likes. We are one like short of the goal. Well, you know what that means. Rules are rules, man. 400 was the goal. Not much I can do about it. But I can tell you, though, that we are going to be doing this all over again on Friday night because we have some more quarterfinal matches in the King and Queen of the Ring tournaments coming up on SmackDown this Friday. And I have to say, this is the most unpredictable part of the bracket for any of these tournaments. We have Nia Jax against Jade Cargill And we have Bianca Belair against Tiffany Stratton. This could go any number of ways. It really could. So I'm looking forward to it just to see what they're going to do, because it's not as predictable as some of the other matches in this tournament have been, either tournament. So that's coming up on Friday night. That is the next time that I will be live with you. And now I see that we are at 430. Boy, we jumped. 434 likes. Breaks the gold tonight for Be the Booker. There you go. Heading towards 440. So there you go. So you got me there. You got me right before the buzzer. So I was about to get out of here. And then you got me. You're cutting it too close with these Wednesday streams, I'm telling you right now. But we did it, so let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
They do update quickly, don't they, David? Very quick. Very quick. Okay, here we go. Curious to see how we do here. Just when I think they're out. Just when I think I'm out of it, they pull me back in. All right, here we go. Tag team, Be the Booker. We begin with Kane and Mankind. So that's what we're starting with here. We are starting with the former tag team champions. Kane and Mankind, not a bad start. Not a bad start. Now we just got to see who we're matching them up with. And then we can talk about what kind of match it would be. Because that's the whole point of Be the Booker, man. All right. Kane and Mankind going to be taking on the Authors of Pain. Pain being the key word. Pain is the key word. I am in pain at the thought of this match. I don't like that match. No bueno. All right, women's Be the Booker. I agree. That ain't it. That ain't it. Women's Be the Booker, we begin with Emma. Emma. Remember the Emma? The Emma dance? Right? What was it? Like, that thing she did with her hands? That was the Emma dance. Is Emma even wrestling? I don't think Emma has wrestled since she got fired. Emma gonna go one-on-one with Raquel Rodriguez. Eh. Eh. We needed a marquee match because we already buzzed out on the tag team end. So I was putting more emphasis here on the women's match, and we just didn't get it. That just doesn't cut the mustard there. So it all comes down to this. This is not going well. This is not going well. What happened to Emma since her latest release? I believe she got married or engaged to Madcap, who also I don't believe has wrestled since he got released. Well, it all falls on this. Here we go. We land on Nicholas Jackson, one half of the AEW World Tag Team Champions. We have one buck so far. The other buck is in here. So it is possible that we could have buck versus buck. And I don't give a fuck. But it's possible that we could end up with the Buck v. Buck. Let's see. Nicholas Jackson. One-on-one. With Pow 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 Powerhouse. Powerhouse. Will Hobbs. Oh, poor Will Hobbs, man. Poor Will Hobbs. Just when you think maybe this time, maybe he'll get something going, then he gets hurt. It's either injuries or it's bad booking. This guy should be a much bigger player right now than he is. But he can be in my main. You could say no all you want to. I didn't say, I didn't, I, look, I'm a Hobbs guy. Okay. I'm a fan of Powerhouse Hobbs. You can call it a Rampage match if you want to. We needed a match. I'll take it. Okay. You want me to add somebody? You want to make it a triple threat match? Is that what you're going to fucking have me do right now? Do you want to turn this into a triple? Fine. We'll make it a triple threat. Fuck this. You people are unbelievable. I can't believe this. All right. We're going to wipe the slate clean on that. We have Nick Jackson. We have Powerhouse Hobbs. I'm going to add one more person and we'll see if this changes your mind. Okay. Here we go. Powerhouse Hobbs, Nick Jackson, and the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Now you got your bell, all right? There you go. Look at that belt, by the way. Tell me that that isn't the best belt in the history of that company. Come on now, man. It's amazing what a little bit of blue will do. Love that belt. Love that belt. That's why it's over my shoulder. There you go. Well, that was not the best edition of Be the Booker, but there you go. At least we cleaned up that main event a little bit. Hey, Justin G. Holy flying cow. We got 400 plus. Yes, we did. Dark Effect with the 5. Do you think we'll ever see a heel Ray? Play up the deadbeat dad gimmick. I guess we kind of got heel Ray, right, during the Filthy Animals phase in WCW when he had the mask off. As far as, like, a heel now, no, I don't think so. That'd be hilarious, though. If he just plays that. Like, it turns out that Dominic was right the entire time and he was a deadbeat. I think that would be hilarious. But, no, I don't think we're going to get it, unfortunately. Oz and Glorious, YouTube Mobile would not let me send a super chat at all tonight. Had to wait until I was on my computer to do so. Well, fuck YouTube, man. That sucks. But I'm glad that you were able to chime in, brother. Thank you for the love. I appreciate that. The Winston Slip, who should take the tag titles from the Bucks? I don't know. Maybe they're waiting until the Motor City Machine Guns come in. And they're going to build them up a little bit. And then they eventually take the belts from the Bucks. Because, I mean, you think of the tag team scene in the company right now. You've got the Bucks. You've got FTR. It's been done to death. So I don't need to see them just trade the belts back and forth. So what else do you got? You got Top Flight. You've got the House of Black. You've got the Bang Bang Gang, right? The Guns, basically. The Lucha Bros haven't been a thing for a minute, and Phoenix is hurt again. Of course. So I don't know what other teams really jump out as, you know, being kind of the hot team in the company right now. If the Machine Guns are going to come in these next, let's say, couple of months, I don't think the Bucks are dropping the belts that quickly. It's entirely possible that by the time they come in and they build them up enough, and I mean, it's Tony Khan, it's AEW. You don't even need to build them up. Have an eliminator match. Boom. There you go. Now they're number one contenders all of a sudden. But I think that it could very well be the Machine Guns. The Acclaimed has cooled off, man. The Acclaimed has been cooled off. Top Flight, you know, I don't see it. Oz and Glorious, the WCW NWO belt is the greatest ever. No, it isn't, but I respect your opinion. The NWO belt, are you talking about the belt when it was spray painted? Actually, I think the big gold belt that Flair held in the late 80s, it's actually a different belt if you look at it. I thought that version of big gold looked a hell of a lot better than the later versions, especially the one in WWE. It never looked as good. That's up there, though. That's one of my favorite belts also. I gotta show it love. Hey, the green pianist plays piano. He's tickling those ivories. I'm heading home. He says, I'm heading home from my studies abroad. We'll see my family for the first time in 5 years. Thanks for keeping me company for long nights. Well, that's very cool. That's a long time not to see your family. So thank you, brother. And I'm happy for you. Big Gold is Dark Effect's favorite. Burner says the 10 pounds of gold. Yeah, but that belt has been forever ruined by Tyrus. So I can never look at the NWA belt the same way again. And Oz and Glorious with a $5 super chat. Never saw a Sasha match, but thought she was killer in Japan. Real stoked that she is part of AEW, if for nothing more than her smoking entrance. What a babe. Easy there, big fella. Easy there. I think I found who wants to work for the CEO. Barry says the WWE title from 2002 to 2005 is the best. That wasn't bad. It was certainly better than the spinner crap. Here's a little word to the wise. If your belt spins, it sucks. Words to live by. There has never been a spinner belt. Certainly none of the ones that I've seen in WWE that were any good. The Cena one sucked. The Edge one sucked. Even Edge hates the Edge one, okay? It sucks. A belt, should, let alone a world title. If you want to have like the 24-7 title and the center plate spins, who cares? You know, it's the 24-7 title. It means nothing. If you have a world heavyweight championship, it should not spin. You don't see too many people vouching for the spinner belt. There's a reason for that. Near, pray for peace. What's up, Solo? Indeed, it's a great goal to have, and I'm doing well. I hope you are doing well also, my friend. Attitude Era Eagle Belt, that's right there. There it is. I love them both. But the Big Eagle is not better than the Winged Eagle. The Small Eagle. All eagles have wings, but that's just sort of what it's become known as. Not shilling, but the hog belts are gorgeous. They are. I'll shill. I don't give a shit. They look great. I've had the chance to hold them and see them up close. The House of Glory world title is a great looking belt. The House of Glory crown jewel title looks incredible. The tag titles look great. The women's title. We got some great looking titles in House of Glory, I have to say. The new titles look fantastic. Barry says the Spinner US title was pretty cool. You know, the Spinner US title, like just as a title, looked better than the WWE title when it spun. But again, any title like that, the US title and all the history behind it, it should not spin. Any spinner title is a no-no for me. Oz and Glorious, your thoughts on spinning tire rims? I guess those have gone out of style. I haven't seen those in a long time. I don't care for them. I wouldn't have them myself. Don't care for them. How can you watch hog shows? Triller TV, which used to be Fight TV. You go to trillertv.com. And you can watch the shows on there. It is a pay service. It is a subscription service, but that is where we stream, so you can watch them there. And every now and then, we might take a free match and put it up. I'm trying to get them to put one of the matches, the Psycho Clown match with Mike Santana from the last show up. I don't know why it's not up, but that is where you can catch HOG. Justin G, as we were talking belts, why do none have pearl paint? I don't know. I have no idea. The white Intercontinental title was pretty. Oh, yeah, it's gorgeous. I love that belt. White IC belt is fantastic. The Winston Slip. Thank you for being a channel member, one of our Red Skulls, for 15 months. Favorite wrestling commercials. Was watching a bunch of Chef Boyardee ads earlier today. The Rock, Mankind, Jericho, Kane. All great commercials. You need to check out the Sting Sprite commercial from the late 90s where he beats up a kid. I'll say no more. That probably is still my favorite wrestler commercial. Sting beating up a kid. There you go. We got Oz and Glorious. Shout out to Bliss fan who knows Julia Hart is better than Alexa Bliss. I think you may have just set off a nuclear explosion, my friend. May God be with you. Sean D, the original TNA title from after they left the NWA. Yeah, from what I remember about that, that was a good-looking belt. Dev to Dust, would I ever get my nose pierced? No, I would never get any part of my anatomy pierced. Would not get my ear pierced, my nose, my belly button, my tongue, other parts of my anatomy. It will never be pierced. Barry MK IC title with the yellow strap was awful. You know what? I didn't mind it. I actually thought that looked pretty cool too. Not as good as the white, but I don't hate it. And Dev to Dust celebrating 26 months of channel membership. Me and JD collabing like Pacino and De Niro, collabing to make heat. Hey Lamont, Andy. Paging either of you. I got a job for you. I got a job for you. Heat is a fantastic movie, by the way. One of my favorites. That whole bank robbery scene. Maybe the best action scene in any movie ever. Baba Booey. The Jeff Hardy title was not a bad looking title. Okay, come on. Come on, Baba Booey. Talking about the purple Jeff Hardy belt. Now you're getting a little crazy. Oz and Glorious, when are we getting GWO shirts? Hashtag justice for the Hofstra mug. There is a GWO shirt. There's literally one up right now in the Pro Wrestling Tee store. So the link is in the description down below to the store. There are GWO shirts, or one shirt, that is in the store. So that is where you can find it. And Marios, with $1.99, to me, Kevin has no one to blame but himself. Kevin who? Which Kevin are we talking about? Is Jeff Hardy still with AEW? Yes. But probably not for much longer. His deal is up a lot sooner than even his brother thought. Oz and Glorious, you do that, my friend. He is going to order that GWO. He had no idea there was a Green World Order shirt in the store on Pro Wrestling Tees for all of our channel members. Actually, anybody can buy it. And he is on it. I like hearing that. Devin from NJ2000. Was the fifth season the best season of The Sopranos, S.H.I.E.L.D., and Breaking Bad? You know, that's a great question. Season 5 was absolutely the best season of Breaking Bad. Season 5 of The Shield, I don't know if that was the best. It's close. It's close. I don't know. I don't know if I would go that far on that one, but it could be. And The Sopranos? I think so. Those are the three best shows, by the way. Sopranos, S.H.I.E.L.D., and Breaking Bad. Yeah, I mean, he says, who's Kevin? Kevin Owens? Kevin Nash? Kevin Dunn? Still have no idea what he was talking about. Anywho, thank you for spending some time with me here. I appreciate it. Like I said earlier, next time I'm with you is going to be Friday night for the SmackDown stream. If you missed the Raw review, go back and check that out. Episode 861 of the podcast with my final Dark Side of the Ring review for this season. That is also up. Actually, that's up on the channel right now, the Dark Side review. And Better Call Saul. Hey, look, I have nothing but love for Better Call Saul. That is also a fantastic show. But man, you know, you only got so many spots in the top three. You got to really narrow it down. For me, it's still Sopranos, Shield, and Breaking Bad. Not necessarily in that order, but it's still those three. Like The Wire, for example. The Wire is a great show. I only first watched The Wire 2 years ago. It took me that long to watch it. It's a great show. It is not in my top three. It may not even be in my top five, but it's a great show. It doesn't diminish the greatness of the show. It just means to me it's not top three. But I mention all of these different shows for any of you who haven't seen some of them. Make sure you make the time to watch them. And I promise you, you can thank me later. You will not regret it. It will be time well spent. Be well. Stay safe. I will see you back here on Friday night for the SmackDown stream. Until then, take care, guys.